Welcome to Day Zero Update for May 11th, 2025. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Dan Red Victorio.
And yeah, back with the full crews, we have a bunch of news this week.
Mm-hmm.
We got good news in the industry now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great. We got some, somebody fucked around and found out with Nintendo, and we'll see how that goes. As well as a number of old games coming back for various reasons, and some new stuff coming out here in the near future. So we'll get to that stuff here shortly, but we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here. I have been playing some Despelote, a very cool like soccer adventure game of sorts about a kid's perspective on the Ecuadorian national team making the World Cup in 2001, I believe. You're kind of experiencing it through like the handful of games they need to get through to qualify, which is neat to see. I believe they have actual footage of the games playing, but with like a heavy filter on them. The game itself also has like a heavy kind of filter on it in a way that's supposed to, at least from my interpretation, emulate like fuzzy memories of sorts. Especially because at the end of each segment, it just progressively gets fuzzier until it switches to the next thing. This is not really a hard game of any kind. I think the hardest thing is probably trophies, because I think all the trophies are tied to the makeshift like retro soccer game that you get to play every so often in it.
Yeah, they are.
Which I was like, I figured there was going to be one for like scoring a goal or whatever, but there's a bunch of them for that, and nothing for actually progressing in the game, so you don't have to worry about missing anything in that sense, but it's pretty cool, pretty well done story. You get a little bit of freedom to mess around in some nice ways. But yeah, you can also just go run over to the TVs in some of these areas and just watch a soccer game play and see how it progresses, which is a neat touch for that. Though I say maybe the one knock I have is it feels like they have a very like Google Street View kind of look to some of the areas where it's clear they took a picture and kind of built a 3D space out of it, and some objects do not look proper. They look like the way that Google Maps will try to render 3D objects that it assumes are 3D objects, and it's sometimes just like a mess of polygons and such. So that's maybe the one little knock I have on it, but otherwise it's a pretty cool little game for what it is. So that's one to check out. That's on everything, I believe, at this point. Let's see. Also been playing some more MLB The Show 25. Been continuing to enjoy this and playing some more of that. They just started their new inning of stuff to unlock, so I've been working on some of that stuff. Not really much else to say about that, but that still continues to be pretty good. And the big thing I've been trying to do is play through Death Stranding Director's Cuts, which is a game that I played a good bit of back when it originally came out, and ended up getting the upgrade for the Director's Cut for PS5, and that's what I'm playing through with a fresh save. I just didn't want to bother importing the PS4 save and having to relearn what the hell I was doing then, and so I'm kind of starting over. And I get helps to have played a little bit before this, because I can remember, you know, a lot of mechanics and in this format, kind of learning better about the assumptions you probably made playing Death Stranding originally, which is like, this seems like more of a dynamic world than it actually is. Things like the weather, the timefall weather, and where the BTs show up and all that are much more scripted than they seemed like they would be in the original game. As I've done going back through certain areas a couple of times, realizing that, being like, okay, I get this a little more. It's not like, oh, rain could happen at any point. It generally happens in certain areas. is an obstacle, much like any other thing there. You know, the rocks and the rivers and all that kind of stuff are obstacles as well. Yeah, I've gotten to the second distribution center. I have not gotten much more time into it, but that's been pretty good. And I think I'm about to hit the first boss fight for weird stuff to continue happening in this. But yeah, enjoying it. Looking forward to put some more time into it. But yeah, that's been a fun game to enjoy and still see people's, you know, ladders and other tools laid out for people to use. To get across gaps without having to use their own equipment for it, which is very nice to see. So,
yep,
that's been fun.
That's honestly one of the best parts of that game, because it feels like a very lonely game at first, but it ends up being more of a collaborative experience as you go on, because all the other players have left, you know, some of their equipment behind for you to use. So,
yeah. And you get to share your, like, thanks for with the likes system.
Yeah. And all the, and keep in mind, those likes add up. You can use those points to buy stuff. So.
Yeah. I always kind of just mash the touchpad for it whenever I get a chance to. Though I do kind of find it deep when you run into, you know, the stuff that's set up by the game itself. By the in-game characters, which is... Like, all right, I guess why you have some of these set up for people until they, you know, get the ability to actually do it themselves. But it would be nice if those are going to actual people then instead of the void.
Yeah.
But there's that. That's been fun. Also been jumping back into Fortnite because they have their like mini season, I think they call it. It's lasting until early June. This one is Star Wars focused, where... it features, you know, the ability to unlock Emperor Palpatine. It's like the big one at the end of the main battle pass. They also have General Grievous and Poe Dameron. And I think Sith Jar Jar Binks is also supposed to be in there as well. Which is fun to kind of have that be in an official Star Wars thing, even if it's not canonical. But it's a big whole event, and they kind of have it patterned around Star Wars. Is there's, you know, a Rebel base and Empire base somewhere on the map, lightsabers, and you run into different characters and can do quests for them, all that kind of stuff, and all the weapons are blasters, so you don't have to manage ammo or anything, but you do have to manage heat on them. So that's an interesting bit of change, but yeah, enjoying this and having some fun with my Michelangelo kind of hanging around the Star Wars world. So there's that. Let's see. Also been playing a Warhammer 40,000 Bolt Gun. I tried this out since it's on PlayStation Plus for the month, and that has been fun to check out. It's very Doom-like, or maybe more Quake-like in its style, because you have an actual ability to kind of look around and interact with the environment in some interesting ways, and you get to jump and do a few more things like that. It has some good accessibility options and all that. You can just make yourself invincible so that you don't have to worry about taking damage or anything. I think I'm playing on the second easiest difficulty. I just don't really care about having a big challenge here. So that's been a fun time, but has lots of enemies that just blow up into chunks, and you get different, a few different weapons, and they do some nice things with the level design to encourage you to search for secrets and all that, and the ability to kind of explore a little bit more than you maybe would normally. But yeah, that's been fun. Story-wise, it's pretty much nonsense for me, but that's not too surprising with the way that Warhammer, my lack of knowledge on Warhammer stuff. But there's that. And I've also been playing some Clair Obscur Expedition 33. I basically just gotten to the other side of the ship stuff, so that you get onto the island and all hell breaks loose. And I've done a few fights after that, and that's about it there. But battle system's pretty neat. I don't know that I'm going to do much parrying. It seems like one mechanic I'm not necessarily going to get the grasp on too much, but maybe that'll change as I do more of it. But yeah, liking it so far. And but it's also a very depressing game. Early on, it's got a lot of the stuff you would expect for a very kind of French story. So there you go. That's been pretty much what I've been doing. So how would you bring it in?
Well, I am, believe it or not, still playing the 100 Line Last Defense Academy and still managing to find all of these just amazing freaking rabbit holes that this game can send you down. Right now, the sort of story arc I'm going through right now is called the Killing Game arc, and it's essentially sort of a send up and kind of deconstruction of, like, you know, the type of games like Danganronpa is. Although the writing is much more like something you'd find in like one of the Zero Escape games. It's a lot tighter, and you basically get to see a bunch of these characters you've grown attached to die in horrific ways. But yeah, it's amazing how this game has like so many different ways that it can go depending on like what decisions you end up making. I recently, before I started the Killing Game arc, I finished what was called the Rebellion arc, which is where you end up managing to find a way to end the war more or less peacefully, where both sides can live on the planet. But there's like other darker ones too, like the Box of Calamity, which is important because one of the things about this game is as you're playing through like the various arcs and stuff, you'll find out that there are story locks every so often that you'll have to, where you'll have to go back and go past certain endings to unlock them and go further in those arcs. That's what the Box of Calamity one is, one of the big ones that you kind of have to go through in order to get through all of it. But you know, it's kind of amazing just how this game, it continues to genuinely amaze me. This is definitely going to be on my game of the year list for sure by the time December rolls around. So, yeah. But on top of that, I also started downloading and playing Unpacking, which, of course, is just a fun little Zen game where you are playing this individual who is moving into different places. First, it's their own room, then an apartment, then like a whole house, a dormitory, that kind of thing. And it's one of those things where it tells you the story essentially through just, you know, unpacking stuff. You get sort of a better idea of who this person is all through their possessions and what their life story is. And it's a fun little game. There's like stakes that are super low. There's no really wrong way to go about it. Just do it at your own pace. And that's just, I love those types of games. And on top of that, I also am playing Clair Obscur Expedition 33, or at least I still am. It's been kind of on the back burner because of the other stuff I've been playing, but I definitely have still been playing it. And speaking of games that are probably going to end up on my Game of the Year list at the end, in December, this is definitely going to be one of them because this is, you know, it's a game that on the one hand is very, very French. It is extremely French. And yet they took so many good lessons from like some of the best JRPGs of the last 30 years and turned it into something that is frankly at times very unpredictable. And also I just love the way it does its world building. It doesn't like try to beat you over the head with like a bunch of info at the very beginning. It kind of just drops you in the middle of all of it and then just sort of slowly reveals the universe you're living in at that time. But yeah, it's still a great game, and I'm really interested to see like how more difficult the game's like gameplay is going to be, because I've heard that there are parts later on in the game where like there will be characters that will attack you in a single session like 9 consecutive times, and you've got to be able to deflect all of them. But yeah, that's what I've been playing. So Dan Reb, I know you've got a big list, so you go ahead and get started.
Yeah, happy to be back. I was traveling for most of April. First was for work to do a LAN party for Gamers Outreach for an event called Gamers Forgiving. That was a pretty good time. We made $1.7 million, which was a quarter million more than we made last year. So yeah, pretty it's a record-breaking event, and it's good to bring games to kids in hospitals. So really proud of that. The weekend after, I was at WrestleMania, and then the weekend after that, I was at the NFL draft. So pretty tired. At the same time, been doing a lot of gaming, so I'll just go ahead and try to get through it as quickly but as carefully as possible. You know, for the past couple months, I have been playing Assassin's Creed Shadows, and I actually rolled credits on it when I was in Detroit. I brought my PS5 with me, and I was like, screw it, let's do it. And, like, the main thing that I was hoping was that the land, was that it would stick the landing. Unfortunately, it did not. And yeah. it's not in a really bad way. The reason why it didn't stick the landing was because, like, the story was actually really getting good. I got to a point where it was, you know, starting to stick. The problem with, you know, the more modern open world Assassin's Creed games is that while they're all, you know, extremely well written, they kind of feel disjointed just because of the open world. There's just so much to do, so much to be distracted by. And, you know, with, first of all, Japan in Assassin's Creed Shadows is absolutely stunning, amazing. Like, I know that, you know, a lot of us were really impressed by it with Ghost of Tsushima, and, you know, the next one will probably get us at that level again, but Ubisoft did an amazing job with the open world here. But yeah, like, I traverse the world trying to do everything that's near me, and by doing that, I lose focus on the story, and that pretty much just leads to it being disjointed. So when you get towards the end, you really start to understand the, why Yasuke and Naoe are really doing what they're doing, not for the story moving forward, but because of who they are, you know, not to get into spoiler territory, but it's the Assassin's Creed part of the game. Anyway, the endings aren't bad. They're just not endings. There is absolutely going to be DLC. You know, that can be a good or bad thing. Like, you know, obviously you want to keep the lifespan of it going for as long as you can. But at the same time, it's like, I rarely ever go back. And I don't know if I want to go back when that time comes. And that's
really heavily reminds me of what happens with Odyssey. Like, it just kind of ends.
Yeah. And like, the other thing, I don't know if you guys have seen the meme, and it was a completely real thing. The credits are 2.5 hours long. So luckily you can skip it. And I was like, okay, that's a whole lot of people. Anyway, the game appears to be selling well, and Ubisoft needed to win, and I'm happy to say that this is it. You know, I just hope that there was like more finality to it, and I know that they want to stretch it a little bit longer, but that kind of
I mean, it's Ubisoft, you know, kind of going in that there's a trade-off, so
So next on my list is Quora. This game is something that I played during Steam Next Fest, and that was where I really got some interest in it. And yeah, this game was published by Don't Nod. I forget the developer, but yeah, they're an indie. And basically, it is an artsy game where you follow a dog around the woods, and you just get really attached. The reason being is the music is just so immersive, and it really helps you get in there. And when I was playing the demo, the dog got kidnapped. So like that was the way I eventually got myself playing the game. And once I got the real product in my hands, it was actually quite different from the demo. The dog still ended up getting kidnapped, but it was actually much later in the game. And yeah, like above all, like it was a really good time. My only real complaint with the game was that there was no platinum trophy. I was like, oh great, all of these are pretty like easy tasks to do, and I usually like to platinum these cozy kinds of games, but that didn't happen. Moving on, there's Lost Records: Bloom and Rage, another Don't Nod game. When the first episode came out, I mentioned that it just took too long to get interesting. And on top of that, the main character and her story wasn't really anything that I was really interested in. So with Rage, the second chapter, you know, I was hoping it would, you know, do the Assassin's Creed thing where it's like, all right, we're going to come to some finality and, you know, it'll stick the landing. This is a bit harder to say if it did or didn't, and for me, it did not. And the main reason why is because I just think I played the game like an idiot. My main problem with the first chapter was that, and you know, Brandon, you played the first one too, right?
Yep.
My issue was that I never actually became a good friend for any of the three girls there.
Okay. Yeah, the game, it's one of those things where it's like, it's really, would have helped if this game's pacing was more akin to Life is Strange, where it's stretched out.
Yeah.
Over like, a given amount of time, because if you do that, then, you know, it gives you enough time to grow attached to them. But because it's all sort of smushed together, doesn't really give you a lot of headway.
Yeah, and like I tried my best to make the main character really reflect what I wanted her to be. But I don't know if it's like the case where Don't Nod just really had, you know, set expectations for how you wanted to use her. Because part of what makes it hard is, you know, of course, every decision you make is going to matter. But, you know, an added fold to it is the fact that if you wait and not answer, that counts. Or if you wait a little longer or look at different parts of the environment, other answers will unlock. And sometimes you'll run out of time to even get to them. And even if you choose them, it also might not be the great answer. So, you know, again, like not to delve too far into spoiler territory, but the main thing with this game is that it takes place in two separate time parts of time. There's one where you're a little girl, and then there's one where you're an adult. And when you're an adult, everyone comes in to reunite. And the whole point is, at the end of the game, you end up doing whatever you want to do together. My ending was with my swan all alone. So, you know, she had her closure, but the other girls didn't for whatever reason. And the main reason was just because I was saying all the wrong things. And it just, you know, it just made for it to not really be an incredibly fun experience. And then the other thing was that it just really shoved the song that the band made down your throat so hard, and I just didn't like it at all. And I just didn't relate with it. So tough there. Like I can definitely see like there was some promise, and I'm sure that, you know, the game or the series will definitely garner some fans moving forward, but it wasn't for me. Next one is Lunar Remastered Collection. I have never played any of the Lunar games in the past. Main reason
me neither.
Because those games are incredibly hard to find now, so it's great that this
Were incredibly hard to find back when they were new releases.
Exactly. and like one of the biggest reasons why like they're as popular as they are, you know, as they always have been, is because they really honed in on the whole anime cutscene thing. And you really see that in the first 5 minutes. Almost every point that could have been animated was animated. I don't know who the animators were, but it was very Sailor Moon-esque to me. Not quite Ghibli. It didn't really have like that level of quality, but at the same time, it's like when it was released, like anime was sort of like an obscure thing that felt like special to like certain nerds, whereas it's more mainstream now. But at the same time, like I really see myself, if had I played it when it came out, I definitely do see myself enjoying it more. I don't really have much to say about what I've been playing. What I do like, though, is that, you know, there are no random battles. That being said, you do see the enemies on the map, and you can't really run away from them just because they're that damn fast. But at the same time, I do like the auto-battling mechanism here. And like, for the most part, the AI is smart. The main thing that I'm not liking is the fact that they just waste their magic way too easily, and there aren't a whole lot of items to get unless you bought them beforehand. I haven't really played all that long. I've probably played 3 hours of the first game, but I definitely do enjoy what I've played so far. And like, you know, it's shown its age in certain areas, but it's still a good game today, which really matters. I'm playing the game on Switch, and I did see that the game sold out immediately, and Gung Ho went ahead and promised that they'll continue to print it, so that's good. Hoping that people who want their copy eventually get theirs. And then, like Chris, I also played Despelote. I actually finished it. I first played this game at GDC, and honestly, I wasn't interested. It wasn't until somebody on their PR firm told me to give it a try, because they told me it was a slice-of-life game, and that's exactly what this is. My thing, though, is that I don't care about soccer, and that part of the world isn't really like some place that I want to visit, and the game didn't really do much to really change my mind there. That being said, you don't really have to like soccer to understand what's going on in the game. As Chris said, like this shows like what life is like for people in this place, and you know, them being in the World Cup, like, I sort of resonated to instances in my own life. Like, you know, in 2010, like, I thought that was a great year because that was when the Green Bay Packers last won the Super Bowl. So that, like, I definitely see those. I can draw those parallels. So that definitely made it enjoyable for me. But yeah, like Chris said, none of the trophies are tied to any of the real gameplay at all. They're all tied to a video game that you play in the game that's also a soccer game. And yeah, like, this is a pretty short experience, maybe about 3 hours. And most of the fun I had was just doing dumb stuff. I remember when I was playing the demo at GDC, I'd be called into the kitchen for dinner. And when I go to the kitchen, I just turn on the stove. My dad would get mad at me, and I'd turn on the stove again, and whatever it may be, and there'd be no repercussions. So I thought that was hilarious. And then I'd go into the living room, I'd play the video game that I was talking about, but the funny thing was, the sister was watching her favorite show, so I was like, nah, screw this, I'm gonna go ahead and play the video game. And then, like, the girl goes out of her way to be like, oh, I'm mad at you, I wish you didn't do that, blah blah. There was another point in the game where we had to play hide and seek outside, and she went hiding, and then I never bothered to look for her. I just kicked a soccer ball around. And yeah, that brings me to one of my main complaints with the game. Kicking the soccer ball, like, as cool as it is not really all that intuitive or, like, all that really controllable, mainly because you control the soccer ball, or you kick it around with the right stick, but your right stick is also, like, what changes your camera view. So, like, there was no way to really have any real sense of control with the ball. And there were some puzzles in the game where you might want to kick another ball out of a tree, or you might want to kick some cans off of a fence. And, you know, I spent, like, maybe 10 to 15 minutes doing each task, and nothing happened. You just do it for the sake of doing it. And I was like, okay, cool, that was a waste of time. But this game is hard to rate. I gave it a 2.5 on the site, but it definitely has some cool points. I don't think Chris reached the part where there all of a sudden is some color. I don't want to spread, like, too much as far as spoilers there, but it definitely was an interesting thing that kind of, like, shed some light on the graphics, and that was pretty cool. But yeah, the main thing is that this is an autobiographical piece that pretty much shows what life was like elsewhere, and it's definitely a cool slice of life in that regard. But if you're looking for something as far as gameplay, there really isn't much of that here. Moving on, 100 Line, Last Defense Academy. I've never finished this game, but it's also the longest preview I've ever written. I knew that I'd be busy, so I ended up giving a code to Brandon, and I was telling Brandon, I was like, hey man, like, I don't know if you've heard of this game, but so far what I've been playing is really fun, and I think you'll really like it too. And then he's like, yeah, I'll give it a try. So now that he's telling me that it's probably going to be on his Game of the Year list, I'm like, all right, cool. We hit a home run there, so I'm happy you're enjoying it.
Yeah.
I'm on, like, day 30.
Yeah.
And, like, that's really where things really start to hit the fan, but I'm sure I haven't seen nothing yet. But what I really liked about this game is that it really balances the whole strategic battle system RPG with the with the mystery, with the graphic novel. And, like, all of that, you know, it's all of that is pretty much central to its own genres in Japanese gaming. So the way that they married all three seems really cool. I was able to talk to the developers about the different endings that they wanted to do and things like that. So, I haven't reached one yet, but I can imagine, you know, just wanting to go back to them even after going through one playthrough. So I'm really looking forward to doing that. But as far as the battle system, it's really enjoyable. It's different in the sense where it's not really about choosing a unit, moving a place, and attacking. From what I've played so far, you want to think about your attacks and your defenses first, because of all the things that can change the gameplay. Like, for example, the percentage at the top of the screen that'll go ahead and give you the super moves. Not really worrying about dying too much, because, you know, the plot has them that they automatically revive, which I don't know how long lasts. And then, like, just all those possibilities really open it up to really make you think of new ways to play. And it's a lot different to something like Fire Emblem, where, you know, you don't want anybody to die because they're gone forever. Again, I don't know if that changes between now and then, but definitely something I'm really enjoying. Did you have a point to make, Brandon?
Yeah, I was going to say, you said you're on day 30. Yeah. Yeah, you genuinely, and I mean this in the genuine way I possibly can, you really have not seen anything yet. Because I don't know how, you know, you've been in day 30 a while, so you've probably noticed. Have you had to make, like, any big choices yet?
No.
Yeah, that's because you don't really at the first.
Mm.
I'm not going to say much more, but I'll just say this. When you think the game is over, it's not. It's just starting. This whole period you're going through right now, it's not actually the game. It's the prologue.
Gotcha. And yeah, like, that's what I love about it here. Like, everything, you know, this development team has done is twisted, and they really turn it up a notch with 100 Line Last Defense Academy. And like, you know, this is a game that I really say go ahead and support. You know, I have two codes. I gave one to Brandon and the other one I use on Steam, but like, I'm going to buy this game just because, like, you could tell that there were a lot of sleepless nights when it came to, like, putting this one out. And,
yeah.
You know, the game's out on Switch, and I forget which other... No, it's really just out on Switch. So, you know, I just definitely wanted to support them and, you know, just go ahead and give them their due praise there. Next up is South of Midnight. This is a game that I got that I thought I got a code for the day it released, but it wasn't a code. It ended up being a 1-year subscription to Xbox Game Pass, which I'm not going to complain about. But yeah, like, I'm really enjoying it so far. I'm on, like, Chapter 6, which I think is almost halfway through. It's pretty much like your typical linear platformer with some battles thrown in. The battles do feel a little clunky when you first start, but eventually you get used to it, and I'm really enjoying the voice acting as well as the story so far. It's probably my most anticipated Xbox game of the year, so I look forward to putting more time in it. And then, you know, on the topic of putting more time and stuff, Clair's Expedition 33. You know, this is the last game that each of us has listed. I was hoping I'd get this code like 2 hours or 2 weeks before the game came out. That didn't happen, and unfortunately, because it came out when it did, I just don't have a whole lot of time. But I am almost through with Act 1. I am really enjoying the story so far. I am really enjoying the battle system. The battle system is just, you know, a mix of like things like Paper Mario and Persona all put in there together. But what I'm really enjoying that I didn't think I'd enjoy that much was the world map. You know, like, it has both scale and smallness to it that, you know, it seems weird to just, you know, talk about it live, but it's something that you have to just try out to really experience. And like, it's really cool so far. And the team is just doing a great job post release, you know, the social team especially. I love like seeing their tweets about, should you parry or dodge? And like, you know, they come to expect a lot of the toxicity that comes, and like they just came ready. And you know, Ben Starr has just been promoting the heck out of this game, and I really appreciate it so far. I'm really enjoying Mael. She seems to be a powerhouse so far, and you know, from everything that I've read about this game, that you can really break the battle system, and I'm looking forward to eventually doing that. So yeah, I know that this game deserves more time, and you know, like Brandon, I expect this to be at or near the top of my top 10 by the end of the year. And yeah, that's been about it. I've also been playing two games that I can't talk about. None of them are too big though, but yeah, I look forward to eventually getting there.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news. First up here, there's some new additions to Game Pass for this past week and the week or so coming up. Let's see, things that are available at the moment. Let's see, there is Dredge on Game Pass Ultimate, PC Game Pass, and Game Pass Standard. That's a very fun fishing adventure game, but with a lot of Cthulhu stuff kind of going on in there.
Yep.
Well worth checking out if you like a fishing game with a little bit of spookiness to it.
Yeah.
So that's one to check out. Also available now, let's see, Dragon Ball Xenoverse 2 on Game Pass Ultimate, PC Game Pass, and Game Pass Standard. That's, you know, one of those arena fighting games that they've been making of the Dragon Ball games for a little bit there. The last one, the Xenoverse series that just has a ton of content, continues to get DLC to it. So there's that. Let's see, we got some Game Pass Standard stuff getting added. Dungeons of Hinterberg, Flintlock, The Siege of Dawn, and Metal Slug Tactics. So if you have that, those are available to play. Let's see, also coming out this past week, Revenge of the Savage Planet on Game Pass Ultimate and PC Game Pass. That's the newest of the Savage Planet games, so there's more of that to do. Let's see. We have one more here that's been out. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutants Unleashed for Game Pass Ultimate, PC Game Pass, and Game Pass Standard. That's the fun little brawler game that I played last year. Follows up the most recent movie, Mutants Mayhem. And yeah, does some more fun stuff with that, so that's one to check out. But for things coming up here in the near future, let's see. On the 13th, Warhammer Vermintide 2 for Game Pass Ultimate and Standard. This is one that's returning. One of those Left 4 Dead style games set in the Warhammer universe.
Yep.
So there's that. New release here on Game Pass Ultimate and PC Game Pass on the 15th, Doom the Dark Ages.
Yep.
That's one you can check out.
Oh, yeah.
As a prequel to the last two games, so...
Yeah. What I've been reading from people who have been playing this is that compared to Doom Eternal, where like it was like all about like really frantic motion all the time, in this game you're a bit more like a tank, so the combat is slightly more not slow, but it's not as frantic as it was with Doom Eternal, and it's a little. It's a you can apparently tank a little more damage, and you can also it's not really slow, but it's deliberate. Fortunately, I have, you know, Game Pass, so I'll be able to play this on the 15th.
Yeah. So yeah, looking forward to that one.
Oh yeah.
See whether it falls on the Doom side of it or the Doom Eternal side of things. As far as enjoyment and all that, but seems like it's targeting back to what people liked around the first game. So we'll see how that goes. On the 16th, that'll be Thursday, I believe. Or no, the Friday, I think it is. Yeah, Friday. Culebra and the Souls of Limbo. Describes as a papercraft adventure game. Which from the screenshots I'm seeing of this, it's got a bit of Paper Mario vibes to it, maybe just without RPG battles. Well, that may be in there. I'm not sure. I'm just looking at the screenshots here, and it seems like an interesting looking game. So that'll be available on the 16th for people to check out. Then on the 20th, which will be next Tuesday, for Game Pass Ultimate, PC Game Pass, and Game Pass Standard, they have Firefighting Simulator, The Squad. So it's one of those simulator games. And also on the same day, they have Police Simulator Patrol Officers. Probably the same company doing that. Yeah, this is the one I played on PlayStation Plus, where you're a cop in a city and kind of going around taking on different kinds of work, you know, doing basic street work, looking for, you know, cars with parking violations and such, and going up to driving around your car to deal with situations and all that. So those are all right. So yeah, that's your lineup there, and some interesting stuff with Doom being kind of the big one here. So yeah, there you go.
All right. Sounds amazing.
Yeah. Let's see here. We got some games with dates. And this one, first up, is Spray Paint Simulator. Will be out on PS5, Xbox, PS4, Xbox One, and PC May 29th. It'll also be on Game Pass. And then it'll be on Switch June 19th. I played a demo for this. It's a pretty neat-looking game. It's very much cribbing from Spray Paint or Car Wash Simulator. But instead of cleaning things, you are spray painting stuff, which works fairly similar from the way that they have it all set up. I'm hoping, or just enough like changes that I would probably double check controls and kind of maybe fine tune it a bit. But what I played seemed pretty solid. In the demo, you kind of, your first thing is a car you're spray painting. So you're going to put up like paper around the tires and headlights and that kind of stuff. And spray painting everything else and having to make sure you got your paint filled up and all that. So that seems neat. I'm looking forward to checking that out on Game Pass. So there's that. Mm-hmm. And then let's see. Yeah, we got more details on Deltarune's release because it's a little more tricky from the way that they describe it here. And that's, you know, being a Switch 2 launch title, they don't want to hold everything back for that specific time frame. So it'll pretty much be out at in Japan starting at midnight on June 5th. It'll also go live digitally at that time. But it's not console exclusive, so it's launching on PS4, PS5, Switch, and PC. And so they've said that that will go live at midnight JST. Since that's ahead of most of the world, that means it'll launch on June 4th in most areas. So I'm going to double check. That'll be, like 11 a.m. Eastern time for us. And so 8 a.m. Pacific time. So people will be able to check it out on June 4th for the most part. So that is pretty nice.
Yeah, so one thing I'm not quite clear here, like, I'm a Toby Fox fan, but I'm not a devoted follower. As far as I know, 3 and 4 aren't out yet. Does that mean they're both coming out at the same time?
That seems to be the case, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it's one package with 1, 2, 3, and 4 for $25. So you'll be able to check it all out. But if you want to play the first two chapters now, you can.
Yeah.
Have it for ready free. For the others.
Yeah.
So yeah, that looks neat. Looking forward to seeing this one.
Oh yeah, definitely. Especially the freaking cliffhanger that chapter 2 leaves off of.
Yeah. So yeah, that'll be fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a few weeks away.
Oh yeah.
Let's see here. As retro releases are happening, the Gex trilogy finally got a date of June 16th. So you'll be able to play the original trilogy on PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC for
$39.99.
It being a limited run published game, they have special editions. There's a classic edition for $74.99. It includes a steelbook, a double-sided poster, soundtrack selection, CD, and a retro-style box. And then a $200 Tale Time edition that includes a big box that has Yoshitaka Amano art on it, which is probably the most Yoshitaka Amano style art you've ever seen, because it's not Final Fantasy art, so it's not that it's not wild, but it's more restrained and focused around a lizard than.
Yeah.
The various, like, wizards and Final Fantasy characters and such you expect. So
yeah.
That's kind of a wild thing you can see there.
And yet, weirdly enough, he totally nails it.
Yeah. Let's see. There's a 36 inflatable Gex doll, 7-inch Gex statue, some trading cards, remote pin, and full soundtrack CD. So, yeah. That's your chance to buy Gex and show. If you're part of the Gex Nation.
Yeah. don't let anybody fool you into thinking these games are good. But it is funny seeing this happen.
Yeah. They're fine games. Very much based around referencing movies and pop culture stuff of the time in the 90s. So that's a thing you can check out. Let's see. Yeah, we had the date for this a little while ago, but we found out more about it. Mafia: The Old Country will be coming to PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC on August 8th. And it'll only be a $49.99 game, which is surprising. You would expect any sort of game that looks like this, like looks as good as these. This game is looking. You expect them to charge $60-$70 at least. For it, but they seem to be going for a little bit cheaper. With a special edition that costs $60 with mostly digital extras, which is a bit surprising, but maybe it'll work out for them and make it a more attractive game to check out in August.
Yeah. I loved that that trailer they released back when the game was announced, where they did like the whole ritual of like how you get initiated into the mafia. Because it turns out that's actually a real thing. That whole thing of like where you like make like an oath over like a picture of a saint, you know, that's, you know, like drip your blood on it and then they set it on fire and you have to like recite the whole oath while, you know, putting it in, you know, to putting it between your hands and moving it back and forth so it doesn't burn you and all that stuff. It's honestly kind of neat. I kind of hope this game ends up being cool because it definitely looks like it.
Yeah. It looks like it's going to be an interesting game, so hopefully it works out for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's also a little funny that we've reached a point where, you know, we're talking about $50 being cheap. I personally don't have any ties to the Mafia series. Like, if it were up to me, like, it would be cheaper. But, you know, I'm sure a lot of people have that opinion about a bunch of other games.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, I do, like, want to give, like, 2K credit for having this be a thing. I also know that the Mafia games also drop in price rather quickly. So, I mean, hopefully this turns some heads in a positive way. I'd love to give it a try. We'll just see when that time comes.
Yep. So yeah, that'll be out in August for you to check out. And probably the most surprising news of the week here ended up being Microsoft announcing that Gears of War Reloaded was coming.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically to the PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC.
Yep.
For, I guess, $40. It'll have multiplayer. It's cross-play and cross-progression between all the platforms. It'll be on Game Pass and all that. And if you own Gears of War Ultimate Edition digitally, you'll get a free upgrade. They specifically call this out. Like, if you didn't own it before that announcement, then you will not get a free copy of this game. This is just a remaster of the last remaster of the first Gears of War game.
Which is, like, it's okay, but honestly, the sequel is far superior.
Yeah, I feel like a trilogy would have been a much better thing to be like, oh, we're putting Gears on PS5. Here's all three games to play.
Yeah, totally. They really should have done that instead of just this one. Because, I mean, the sort of, like, sort of joke with the Gears of War series is that it actually does have, like, a lot of lore to it, but you wouldn't really know it by playing the games.
Yeah.
So, like, that first game in particular is, like, anybody who remembers when that first game came out, it was very much meant to be, like, a showcase for what the Xbox's graphical prowess could achieve, that more or less stayed the case throughout the original trilogy's lifetime. But, you know, by modern standards, it is very, very primitive and also extremely, like, repetitive as well, because almost the entirety of that first game is a complete, it's like, you know, run to cover, shoot, repeat. That's the entire game.
Yeah.
Just all of it.
Yeah, and that first game, like, has hints of horror stuff to it that they never really pay off.
Yeah, not much really.
In the series again. Just like one of those weird things. It's like, this was an early part of the way they were thinking about going, because it's obviously they were influenced by Resident Evil 4.
Mm-hmm.
But then they kind of pulled back on and just went more action movie stuff with the rest of the games. But yeah.
Yeah, I was in high school when the game originally released, and it was an event. Like, this was like the proof that Microsoft was on top of Sony. and they were not looking back, because this was what really, in my opinion, what really made the Xbox 360 the launching pad for Microsoft to show what dominance that they did. Because like everybody and their mom was talking about Gears of War, and at the time I only had a Wii, so like I don't know like what was going on there. But yeah, I've never played a game in the series, but it is pretty wild to think that all of a sudden it's coming to PlayStation. So it just goes to show that times are changing. But at the same time, it's like, you know, you want to go to where the audiences are. And if people went from PlayStation to Xbox back to PlayStation again, you might as well put Gears on there. And yeah, hopefully, like, this means that the rest of the series gets, you know, some more credit. Because, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think there's a Gears of War this current generation, right? So, you know, hopefully...
Nope, there isn't. The last one was Gears 5, and that was...
That was Xbox One, right?
Yeah, like 2018, 2019, something like that. Okay.
Yeah, 2019. So,
yeah. Okay, yeah, and like that for a long time. Like this was, I mean, I don't want to say it was the new Halo, but it definitely had like that kind of stranglehold on the industry. So.
Oh, it really did. Like the whole like cover shooter thing, like whole cover shooter trend, basically started because of this game.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting that they still continue to refuse to finish that trilogy, the second trilogy, 4, 5, and you assume 6, because it's they leave off on a bit of a cliffhanger.
Yeah,
as you're figuring out like what else is going on here, and it's like, no, we're gonna do a prequel to 1 with E-Day, which I assume must be coming to PS5 if they're doing this.
Yeah. Which, I mean, E-Day itself would be fascinating to see, because although I made that joke earlier, it is true that the Gears of War universe actually does have a lot of very interesting lore, and I kind of want to see what the Coalition of Ordered Governments was like before E-Day happened.
Yeah.
Because, like, basically all we ever see of the COG is, you know, after that event during the Locust War. We never see, like, what it is, you know, in the interim period after the Pendulum Wars and everything.
Yeah. Because, yeah, it's like, it's kind of like when you watch, like, the original Star Wars trilogy and hear them talk about the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that must have been an interesting time. And then they put out the actual movie featuring a good chunk of it. And you're like, oh, this isn't as interesting as it could have been. But
then you see the animated series and you're like, oh, actually, it is very interesting. It's just that they put all the shitty stuff for the movie.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is neat that it's happening. It's not really an exciting release, at least for somebody that's played Gears of War 1 a few times, not to completion, but I've started a bunch and definitely like, oh, this is our first attempt at a Gears of War game. And they get better than the other two.
Oh, yeah. And by leaps and bounds,
starting
too.
Over again, so.
Yeah. I really cannot emphasize enough how much that series improves with its sequels in like ways that you would not imagine. It's almost night and day.
Horde mode isn't even in the first game.
Yeah, Horde mode isn't even in the first game.
As of them being like, oh, we need more. Do this because the multiplayer is pretty good, but it's also very much people, you know, doing the dodge rolls and shotgunning people with ridiculous skills. So. There you go. Gears of War. Reloaded.
Yeah.
A remaster of a remaster, so you know, one of those things. So that'll be out in August. But we do have something coming out in September. Trails in the Sky, first chapter. That will be launching worldwide September 19th. I believe their first worldwide release for the series. Which is fun to see. And yeah, you'll be able to play through that first game, like the only one they have not really done much remastering or anything with to bring it to, say, all the modern consoles. You can still play it on PC, but even then, it's like very clear that that's a PSP port with not a lot of options to make it look, you know, really good for the time. But the new 3D stuff here looks really nice. So that'll be nice to see.
Yeah, I mean, Brandon and I can go ad nauseum about like what this release means, but yeah, the fact that it's a worldwide release is a big deal. This is Falcom's, biggest punch as far as finally making Trails a mainstream thing. And a lot of gatekeepers, don't want that to happen, but this is definitely a series that deserves a bigger audience, and this is the way it's going to do it because, as Chris mentioned, like, if you're not a PC player, it is really hard to get your hands on this game and its continuity, or sorry, the series and its continuity, just because they're all over the place. And this allows you to start from the very beginning. And like, even though we can say that games like Code Steel 1 or, Trails from Zero or Daybreak 1 are great places to start, there is no better place to start than Sky the First. And not only does this allow you to do it, but like, looking at these screenshots, looking at this footage, the game looks absolutely tremendous. I don't see a problem at all. If it runs into any problems, it'll probably be frame rate issues on Switch. But other than that, like, I am ready and my body is ready. I cannot wait for this release. The only thing that I'm worried about is that it is published by Gung Ho, and seeing what they did with Lunar, it makes me worried about getting it on day one. But at the end of the day, like, I know what this game represents, and I am hoping that this game is the one that eventually makes Trails at least be half of what Persona is as far as popularity goes.
Yeah. This is the only game in the series I've beaten. Not for lack of trying to play the other games, but it's also like they made a big deal about carrying saves over to the second chapter. And with the way they released that stuff on PSP and all that was tougher than possible. So I've been playing the first game on my Steam Deck, which works out mostly fine. It runs well and all that, but it's also like, yeah, this is an old game, and it's definitely one of those you might want to have a guide on occasion for the side quests, because you can easily lose track of where you need to go for some of that stuff. The way they describe it to you is like, a lot of like, just go find this person. It's like, okay, they're somewhere in this whole area. I gotta go talk to all these people because none of them have name tags on them before you talk to them. You end up spending a lot of time doing that, and it's like, oh, you gotta go to this specific place, find this thing, and it's like, what? Where? It's like, I had to go change a light bulb, and then on a light post, and it's like, this a little bit tougher than it could have been, but that's a game that's probably nearly 20 years old at this point, so it's not too surprising on that kind of stuff.
A lot of the later games of the series make the side quests a little bit more approachable. But yeah, at the same time, it's like a lot of the side quests you do come across, like, I don't want to say are the same thing, but you eventually learn to find the pattern. And like, honestly, the main thing that I've always found difficult, which the series hasn't really fixed, is the hidden side quests. Because sometimes, like, you have to talk to people more than twice, and there's a lot of dialogue in this game. So when it comes to finding those hidden side quests, you definitely need a guide for those, at least for me.
So yeah, there's that. That'll be out in September, and is a good place to start with the series. And now you have like 15 other games to play as well. So yeah, there you go for that. Next up here, we'll go with another one of the big news of the week. After announcing their delay to May 26th of next year, Rockstar released their second trailer for GTA 6, which has a lot of nonsense in it, as you would expect.
Because it's GTA, and that's kind of what it is.
Yeah, and it's very much putting a big focus on, Florida as a whole, and the concept of the Florida man. Type of nonsense stuff that goes on in Florida all the time, that they're kind of expanding on here. And yeah, you're playing as two main characters, Jason Duvall and Lucia Caminos, who is in the trailer getting out of prison. And they sort of team up to try to make their way in the criminal underworld of Leonida, their version of Florida. And all that can go through a lot of wild stuff. So, yeah.
And also tons of shots of Lucia's ass. Because that's like a third of the trailer.
So yeah, there's that.
It's a very nice ass, do not get me wrong, but I mean, it was just on the edge of gratuitous.
Yeah. But it seems like that is going to be the big thing is a lot of partying and probably lots of outfits for both of them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's Florida, so.
Things, so, yeah.
And apparently if you go, like, to Rockstar's website and stuff, it'll give you a bit more info of, like, what you're actually seeing. Like, who's that dude that he's working for? The dude that you see at the beginning who's like, you know, just go get my checks. Turns out he's a drug runner.
Yeah.
And you're working for him. So when he's talking about go get my checks, he's saying go get to the people who owe me money.
Yeah. And yeah, that's going to be fun to see the cast of characters there, because there's plenty to pull from in this sort of version of Florida.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, they definitely do have a bunch of screenshots and such, so that'll be fun to see. Yeah, yeah, and they also have on this site, I think, like the different areas in Florida are at Leonida.
Mm-hmm.
They have like their versions of Vice City is obviously Miami.
Mm-hmm.
But they got other places like the Everglades, the
Florida
Keys,
Jacksonville.
Yeah. Like, that'll be fun.
Mm.
As we start to see more gameplay, because there's obviously like in-game cutscenes here from missions and such, but we don't get any actual like behind the back gameplay stuff going on here, but yeah, it's starting to seem like more of a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to wait about another year for the game to release, so yeah, that'll be fun to see.
All right.
Yeah. Let me see here. We got some more retro stuff happening. The studio, let's see. Or no, it's the series creator of Echo the Dolphin, Ed Anunzida, announced that they are doing remasters of the original two games, Echo the Dolphin for Genesis and Echo the Tides of Time. Though I thought there was a Dreamcast game.
There is a Dreamcast game.
Okay. I wonder if that's part of this. But they mentioned a third game they're working on, so maybe they don't consider that the third game. But yeah, he seems to be talking about having a team that's working on the remasters of these games, and they'll be making another game with what he says here, contemporary play and GPU sensibilities, which I don't know what the GPU sensibilities are.
Mm.
Maybe just more modern visual styles. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it has a countdown on their website for echothedolphin.com that ends on April 25th, 2026. So you have a ways to go for that.
Yeah. If we can, if this means that, you know, Sega is willing to start revitalizing some of their slightly more obscure IPs. Fingers crossed, maybe they'll end up doing the same for Skies of Arcadia.
Yeah. I was off in another world real quick, so I just wanted to just quickly comment on GTA 6. I did not care about the first trailer when I first saw it. It didn't look, you know, all that different to me from what we've gotten before. But this new one looks so much better. I wouldn't say it's really raised my excitement for the game, because I know that it's coming out next year, or, you know, maybe. But they've definitely really fixed up the character models. You know, like, a lot of people talk about Rockstar being at the top of their game, especially in their graphics. But I feel like animation still belongs to Naughty Dog. You know, I feel like they're untouched there. But, like, from what we saw from the character models in this GTA 6 trailer, I am definitely more excited for, like, what's going to happen. You know, obviously you want to see more gameplay, and I think, like, around the second trailer for GTA 5, like, we already saw some stuff about GTA Online, but, yeah, you want to see more for that, but at the same time, it's like, cool, I'm glad that we're seeing more about this plot, and, like, now that there is a romantic relationship that actually matters, that could definitely raise the stakes in the game, and I'm looking forward to seeing how that turns out. Anyway, getting back to Echo the Dolphin, I wouldn't call myself a fan of this series, but I did play them. That being said, like, I played them. I was like 7 or 8 years old. I didn't know what I was actually doing. I remember playing the first one on Sega Genesis, and like, you know, I thought the water physics were cool and jumping above the surface to like not really collect rings but go through hoops. And I was like, okay, I'm talking to other dolphins through telepathic stuff. I'm like, am I playing an RPG? I don't actually know, because they're like, I think I read that this is an action adventure, but I don't remember actually fighting in any Echo game. So yeah, I am interested in seeing how they try to remaster it and seeing if I've gotten smarter as a gamer, because I don't actually know what those games are about.
Yeah, that's a series that I played. I rented the original on the Genesis. I just never really enjoyed it. It's like, oh, I can swim around this area and then go flipping around in the air and all that. And then that's about all I remember, like never really piecing together what I was really supposed to be doing.
Yeah, like, I mean, I don't want to blame the game for that, but like, it was just tough to know what path you had to go through, because I was just swimming back and forth like you did. So,
So, curious to see like how things go with this, these remasters in 2025 or 2026, because it would be interesting to see like modern players kind of reevaluating this game. That's a game you could put out on a Genesis where, you know, you're mainly focused on Sonic the Hedgehog and that kind of stuff. And that's kind of the very artsy-fartsy kind of game, even though I know it goes into aliens and such.
Oh, yeah.
Places where it's like, okay, it would be nice to have that more involved up front, but where it was starting out, I was like, okay, this is neat, it's a little chill kind of game, but I was also not really into chill games at that point. Nor were there many chill games in that era, really. But yeah, curious to see that the website has a countdown that's, if I'm looking at this right, it says we have 8,294 hours until this ends. So it'll be a while. We have that one. We got another old game bit of news with Bubsy in the Perfect Collection. There's a pun there in perfect, because they can't not do that in a Bubsy collection. But it's got they announced the games that would be in this. There's the Jaguar game, Bubsy and Fractured Fractured Furry Tales. I feel like that's a game that's not been seen much outside of the original release. There's Bubsy and Claws Encounters of the Furred Kind. That's Genesis, Super Nintendo, and Super Famicom. Bubsy 2 for the Game Boy, Genesis, and Super Nintendo. And Bubsy 3D for the PlayStation, which
is, if you didn't know, that is,
was an early game for the studio that would become known as Bend Studio. Makers of the Siphon Filter games and Days Gone. That was their prior game. Maybe their first game. I'm not sure. I'm going to double check here. No, that wasn't their first game. They made some Apple Newton games. So fun there, especially a Columbo game. So there's fun stuff there. They made a live action football for the Mac and Windows. And then they made a little game called Bubsy 3D for the PS1. When they were called Eidetic, published by Accolade, another publisher that I don't think exists anymore. From that era, that published a lot of middling stuff, and Bubsy 3D was a terrible game that did not do well. Luckily, the studio survived and hooked up with PlayStation and went to bigger and better things. With a Siphon Filter. So, yeah, fun times. One of the more fun, like, origin stories of studios that are well known these days. It's like them, Naughty Dog, made a lot of bad games before they became Naughty Dog.
Yeah, they did. Well, they made some bad games and some okay games. Rings of Power was okay, and although Way of the Warrior was terrible. But, you know, yeah, they did eventually go to Crash Bandicoot, and they basically put out bangers pretty much since.
But yeah, this collection, it's one of those curiosity collections, very much like,
yeah,
you buy it because you're like, well, I need to have access to Bubsy games just so I can calibrate my ability to assess other games.
Yeah.
Because every once in a while you need to play some shit games just to know what shit games are.
Every so often you need to reach rock bottom before you can remember what going up is like.
Yeah. I don't think all of these are bad games, but some of them are very bad.
The first game is okay. It's very playable. And, you know, back in the day when a lot of us couldn't really afford to buy games individually, we had to rent them. It was a good rental. And then it just got progressively worse with each game after it.
Yeah.
Finally ending up in Bubsy 3D, which really is just notorious for just how awful it is. Like, when we talk about how bad this game is, this is like up there with like Superman 64.
Yeah.
And just in like the league of awful games. It's like everything in that game is designed to irritate the crap out of you.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not only is it unpleasant to control or unpleasant to move around, it's just unpleasant to hear. Because he never shuts up.
Oh, yeah.
And for some reason, they gave him this really high-pitched, scratchy voice. So you're constantly hearing him do these stupid quips that nobody asked for.
Yeah, because that was the thing you can do on CDs is have your characters talking. That's a thing that a number of games went overboard with.
Mm-hmm.
And Skex.
Yep.
That was a big part of that. I was like, we could put all this dialogue from Dana Gould on here, which ages it faster than almost everything else about the game.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this collection, I don't think I have a date on it or anything, but it'll be a curiosity collection. It's not one that's put out because it's like, these are games anybody's really been asking for.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a collection of games that's, you know, is worth putting out there. Especially when you have, you know, no issues with the license or anything, so that's one you can check out. So I think it'll be sometime later this year.
Mm-hmm.
For that. So there you go. But let's get to some pretty good news here. The Bungie layoffs from last year. There was a part of that news that Sony essentially was peeling off a number of people, part of their incubation team.
Yep.
To form a new studio within PlayStation Studios to work on the game that they were working on, to keep working on that. And they officially unveiled the studio, called it Team LFG.
Mm-hmm.
The LFG does not stand for Let's Fucking Go. They highlight here. Stands for Looking for Group. Part of the sort of co-op games they kind of want to make. Particularly the one that they talked about here. As I say, our first game is a team-based action game that draws inspiration from fighting games, platformers, MOBAs, life sims, and frog-type games. Players will inhabit a lighthearted comedic world set in brand new mythic sci-fi, science fantasy universe. We can't wait to reveal more. Fun thing, Bungie tweeted about this game ages ago when they were sort of incubating it in early development, and basically use that description in its entirety in that tweet. So,
yep,
it seems like a game has not changed much at all.
Yeah,
if you're wondering, and so yeah, that makes for an interesting thing is people try to figure out, like, what the fuck is a frog type game?
Mm-hmm.
Is that like a Frogger game or you know, frog fractions? You know, what kind of frog, what is the reference here? Even is it just, it's a very hoppy game, kind of thing. So no idea. We'll have to wait for actual footage to come out to be like, oh, this is why they call it a frog type game, or like, what the fuck is the frog part of this sort of thing. But yeah, good to see that these people are able to kind of be pulled out of a chaotic moment of layoffs at Bungie and be able to still stick together and keep working on this game, and hopefully it turns out well. I'm assuming this will be out in the next year or two, but I was good to see studios kind of forming in the ways that things are kind of chaotic in this industry right now. So yeah, there you go. Let's see. We got our Nintendo news of the week. Because if you remember back at CES, one accessory maker named Genki was showing a 3D printed mock-up of the Switch 2 on the show floor, kind of showing people like, here's our accessories we're making for this thing. This is kind of what it looks like. You know, kind of acting like they were showing off the most dangerous thing in the world, and ends up being that, yeah, it was pretty dangerous because Nintendo has now sued them. They filed it on May 2nd in the U.S. District Court for the Central District of California, accusing Genki of trademark infringement, unfair competition, and false advertising. They're specifically targeting video ads for Switch 2 accessories that Genki released in April, claiming day one compatibility with the unreleased hardware. Saying here in the complaint, either defendant is not in possession of genuine console and thus cannot claim compatibility with enough certainty to make its advertising claims in good faith, or defendant unlawfully or illicitly obtained an authentic Nintendo Switch 2 or proprietary technical information about the Nintendo Switch 2 prior to the console's release to the public. Which is like, yeah, if they're not an official accessory maker releasing accessories in April, 2 months ahead of launch, one is a very bold thing to do, and very much will get Nintendo's attention because they do not want people releasing at least unauthorized accessories, at least at the moment. And Genki seems to have reacted to this, saying, you may have seen that Nintendo recently filed a lawsuit against us. We're taking it seriously and working with legal counsel to respond thoughtfully. Seems like they're still showing off their merchandise. Supposedly at this weekend's PAX East. So I'm curious to see where this goes. But yeah, they said here, what we can say is this. Genki has always been an independent company focused on building innovative gaming accessories for the community we love. We're proud of the work we've done. We stand by the quality and originality of our products. While we can't comment in detail, we're continuing preparations to fulfill orders and showcase our newest products at PAX East this week. Grateful for the overwhelming support we've received so far. We'll share more when we can, but for now we're staying focused on doing what we do best, building gear for gamers. So yeah, I don't know what's going on there, but yeah, this is fun to see. And yeah, looks like it's gonna be an interesting time for them.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna lie. Prior to you know them leaking everything, I didn't even know who they were. But that being said, like a lot of my iPhone accessories are from third parties on Amazon who I know nothing about, but I'm happy with the quality and stuff anyway. But yeah, like as you said earlier, you know, like if Ryan find out, this is what happens. And you know they wanted to go ahead and fly too close to the sun, and this is what it's going to be. I don't think it'll be something that'll end them as a company. I'm pretty sure though that this will lead to a settlement. But yeah, like they knew what they were doing, so
yeah,
it's weird.
Yeah, I think this will, at the very least, result in a cease and desist on making these accessories. I don't know if there's going to be any financial part of it, but I'm sure Nintendo would like to at least send a message to people building materials and accessories based on leaks and such. To like tread carefully when you're doing it, not just be like, ah, here, you can come to our booth at CES and see what the Switch 2 looks like. Because, you know, we're just doing this all on our own. So, you know, like a punk rock very attitude, even though it's like Yeah, but you're gonna very much anger the beast, but they have, and we'll see how this goes. We'll see what updates come from this, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be fun to see. And yeah, let's get to our last couple bits of news here that are good news.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like the Overwatch 2 team has unionized.
Yep.
For Blizzard, that includes nearly 200 developers across disciplines ranging from art to testing,
yep,
to engineering and design. Basically, anyone who doesn't have someone else reporting to them, management. It's
mm-hmm.
the second wall-to-wall union at the at Blizzard since the World of Warcraft team unionized last July.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good on them. They've joined the CWA as part of their video game workers groups in there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, the big question is whether Microsoft will agree to any sort of negotiations, because they've very much been against that with the Bethesda teams.
Oh, yeah.
We'll see, but good on these devs for at least taking the first step to trying to get more fair deals done.
Yeah.
And have a better pay and wages and benefits and all that.
And hopefully maybe slightly more control over the direction of the game. Maybe just by a little. Because they basically had to... Basically, like, the developers had to sacrifice just so much in order to not just to bring this game to market, but to even, like, further develop it afterwards.
Yeah. So, from what I've seen, Overwatch 2 has done much better recently.
Yeah, it has.
Bringing in an audience and all that, so they're at least, I believe they're bringing back the 6v6 stuff.
Mm-hmm.
At least getting back to a path where, you know, you can see them recognizing what people liked about the first game and
mm-hmm.
wanting to do more of that than just what I think people have generally taken as you're just doing this to be like Overwatch League and focusing on that over what the players want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, it's nice to want all that stuff, but like, yeah, the bottom line of this is to just be able to protect their employees, you know, as we saw. Microsoft and Activision, Blizzard, all three of them have had like respective layoffs over the last 3 years that have, you know, sent ripples throughout the entire industry. And this is another way to protect them. I'm not sure how big of an impact it'll make, but considering they've already had, you know, sizable layoffs in the past, you would hope that it does provide an extra layer of protection for these people. And at the same time, it's like, yeah, obviously you want to see the creative differences totally work out in such a way where they can definitely, you know, benefit, you know, both the developers and the gamers can benefit, because Overwatch has seen a tumultuous launch and, you know, live service up until this point. And obviously you want to see that improve, but I'm happy that, you know, we're seeing the team want to protect one another, because it doesn't happen enough. And even though we've seen a lot of bad stuff happen despite unionization, you know, at least we're seeing a trend towards that direction, and I think that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we wish them the best of luck in negotiations, at least getting Microsoft to the table, because they seem like they don't want to be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not too surprising for Microsoft to do that, so... there you go. And we'll end up here on our last story. We talked about last week of a number of Giant Bomb staff leaving or being fired.
Yep.
As Fandom was putting their foot down on forcing new rules and, you know, guidelines and such on the sort of content they could and couldn't do. And
weirdly enough, they all decided to take the third option.
Yeah, they had a panel still at PAX. Mm-hmm. And seemingly worked on a deal with Fandom to acquire the site from Fandom. And they'll be running it. The main five crew of Jeff Backlar, Jeff Grubb, Dan Reichert, Gian Ochoa, and Mike Minotti will be running that site for the time being. And they've announced the ability to sign up for a new premium model for them. It's $10 a month or $99.99 per year. which is double what it was before, but that was also with the backing of, you know, corporations to ensure they got paid. This is going to be their main way of getting paid through this. So they are increasing it a bit and you know, working through getting perks in there and such, like access to premium-only Discord channels and some other extra content and all that. So that'll be fun. It's great to see them be able to actually buy the site back.
Yeah.
The games people were able to do that a month or so ago.
Yeah.
So it's a nice trend here. And
Best part is Giant Bomb. Best part now is Giant Bomb is not only independent, it's now an employee-owned company.
Yeah. And for the first time, they are independent.
Mm-hmm.
Even back when they were formed, it was under Whiskey Media.
Yep.
So they owned it, which if you listened to Jeff Gerstmann's podcast last week or Nextlander's podcast, which is the two main crews of the former founders of the site, Jeff Gerstmann particularly talked about how he kind of considered Giant Bomb a failure because it was originally formed to be, you know, essentially rebel against what they hated about GameSpot, what it had become, with the focus on, you know, grinding people into dust to get as much content as possible, and then being sold back to CBS Interactive, you know, a handful of years after starting, was kind of the way that Jeff took it, is like a failure to stay away from them, and being. They ended up surviving mostly because of, you know, their premium subscribers, able to kind of show that they had value in a way that none of their ownership did. Saw on the site, it seemed to progressively get worse with each new owner they ended up getting. And so, yeah, now they'll be able to decide on what they want to make and do things for the benefit of what they enjoy and what the audience enjoys versus what a corporate overlord wants the most.
Yeah,
that'll be great news because it's not happening very much these days in the games media.
Yeah, and especially not when that's an employee-owned company. I cannot emphasize enough how much of a game changer that is.
Yeah,
because that literally means it's a cooperative now.
Yeah,
yeah. This is obviously fantastic news. When the news first hit of, you know, guys like Grubb and Minotti quitting last week, it definitely you know, affected me. These are people that, you know, I've met a few years ago. I've really grown to appreciate the content that they've put out, and you know, we've talked a lot about it in the past. We wouldn't exist without a site like Giant Bomb existing either. You know, a lot of this site's founders came from GameSpot as moderators, and then when that whole thing with Jeff happened, we also just decided to leave the site from there. That being said, like, there's, I mean, as far as I go, there's no ill will. You know, I have a lot of respect for Giant Bomb's founders, and obviously I'm friends with a lot of these people now, and like, you know, I am absolutely happy that they're now an employee owned company. As Chris mentioned, like, you know, when they got their first start, Whiskey Media was pretty much like, you know, the tell all do all boss, if that counts as anything. But happy to see this sort of thing happen. Giant Bomb exists because of its fans who allow them to, you know, go as crazy as they go. They are not gaming journalism. They are gaming coverage. They are gaming culture. And it's such a way where it doesn't really show a disrespectful side of the industry. Yes, it's very real and very raw, but at the same time, it's like, if I were to say someone like, you know, it's not true, but if I were to say that, you know, someone like Jeff Grubb is like the face of games media, like, I'm totally fine doing that just because, like, I know, like, what kind of work and how much respect he's gained, you know, over these past few years. And yeah, it's overall, it's great news, and I'm happy for all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, if you want to check out their at least sign up page, I believe it is giantbomb.com/join to support them. I got plans there, and I explained for the most part, though, I think this is still kind of the based off of the old subscription page, so I may have some things to tweak and whatnot, but Yeah, you can check it out and support them. Support as much independent media as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a good bit of it out there, MinMax and Aftermath and a number of other groups out there that are worth supporting if you can.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you consume their content on YouTube and Twitch and podcasts for free. Throw mm-hmm. them some bucks here and then.
Yeah.
There. But yeah, that's going to do it for this week. Thank you to Brandon and Danner for joining.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and things to talk about, especially as we get closer and closer to the Switch 2's launch.
Mm-hmm.
I assume you got a pre-order in for the Switch 2, Danner?
I have three.
All right. So yeah, that was a fun night to try to get one pre-ordered. So
yeah, I was on a plane trying to get mine, and it wouldn't work out. And when I landed and got to my hotel, I was able to get lucky with the Best Buy waiting list. And then my other one came from Target, and I don't know how this worked out, but when I was like trying to go through with my phone, it would not accept my address. And eventually I put the right one in there, and I just like spammed the place order button, and that actually worked on my laptop. So impressed from that. And then the other one is on Nintendo.com. So I was able to get that email a few days ago.
Yeah, I got that email. It's like, all right, cool. I don't need this. That was my backup.
Nice.
For that. So that was nice to be like, oh, let somebody that actually needs it have a chance at this.
Yeah. Hopefully we're going
to get it. Especially because that seems to be the avenue where they're like, we cannot guarantee you'll get this before launch.
Yeah.
Because we're like, we have not sent out this much stuff from our store at one time.
Mm-hmm.
I bet that is going to be their big force or their big test of what they're capable of from there. Hopefully it goes well, because otherwise it's going to be a shit show and it'll be all Nintendo's fault.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go. Yeah, if you enjoy the show, for let friends and family know to check them, check out the podcast and Select Strangers that also support independent media out there. So yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Mm-hmm. Hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.
See ya.
Bye.